already been a really good show. Our pal Ed Wheatley is here. Ed is just Mr. Sports, Mr. St. Louis. He's just written one of his many books about Rawlings, and I love it. It's in my office now. Andrew's going to grab it so I can have Ed sign it for me. Read it cover to cover. It is just... It's such a great book for anyone, but for a glove nerd like me, it is like the Bible. It's so great.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate y'all being having me back. But, it, you know, it's kind of like, it's about the glove, but it's also the game of baseball and how it changed. And one of the biggest things that changed baseball was the glove. You got to remember, we're celebrating the 150th anniversary of baseball this year. Everybody thinks 250 for the country, but 150 for baseball, yeah, you know, we're all about. And, you know, the first 10 years... up until the late 1880s, they did not play with gloves. And the glove entered and changed. You know, they didn't pitch overhand in those first 10 years either.
And the whole point was to let the hitter hit it.
Yeah.
When they first started, which, you know, seems so bizarre.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, an outfielder comes running in, let the ball bounce. You could one out, hop, catch it, you're out, you know.
Wow. Or,
there was just so many rule changes. So it changed. You know, and games were 32-26 or something, you know. And all of a sudden, they're 7-3. You know, when
you ever play 16-inch softball?
I have.
Sounds like it's a lot. Like, you ever play that, Dave?
I never did.
Oh, it's a Chicago thing. I think they played in Iowa too, right? Chicago and Iowa, and it's like a plane with a grapefruit. It's this giant softball, and it sucks. I hate it so much.
It is very different.
Yeah,
but it. But no, it's really good to take people back with memories, whether, you know, all the catalog ads of the old gloves. Don't look at the prices, compare them to now, because
$2.
Many of those gloves, $2, $4. And, you know, you can see the glove you grew up with. And and then, you know, we get into today and, you know, unique moments in history. Like, you know, there's just so many. Had the big whiteboard. What are we going to use? Which is the 50, you know, that we want to put in, you know. But 100 years ago to this season, 1926. A catch, a tag, an out, world champions. That's, you know, people forget. Babe Ruth, ninth inning of the seventh game of the World Series with two outs. Cardinals winning by a run. He tries to steal first base. I mean, second base. He was on first. Grover Cleveland had gotten the first two guys out easily. Earlier, he'd struck out Tony Lazzari with the bases loaded. But it was a toss to Hornsby covering second base, tags him out. World Series over. Everybody thought Ruth was a GOAT, you know. Not in the term we know GOAT today sports.
Yeah.
But he said the way he Alexander was throwing, there was no way we were going to get a decent hit. But I couldn't score from first to tie the game, you know, with two outs. But maybe if I could get to second and something happened, I could tie the game. Which, very logical, good strategy, but it didn't work out.
Yeah. Yesterday, I went out to Rawlings experience in Westport, my first time. Lindsay, who you work with, is fantastic. And I'll get this wrong, but she was showing me the evolution of the gloves, the first one fingerless.
Yes.
And she said that it was a St. Louis Cardinal in 1919.
Yes.
Mr. Hokey?
Bill Doak.
Bill Doak.
He was a pitcher, Bill Doak, who the very first gloves in the 1880s, Rawlings put their patent out there. They did not have fingers, you're correct. 1900, they put the covers fingers. It was still just like a big winter glove, you know. The evolution of the famous phrase, use two hands, because this had no pocket, so this hand stopped it, and this hand held
it in.
So Bill Doak, a pitcher for the Cardinals, he came in 1919, and they put a strap between the first finger and the thumb, kind of forming the pocket, so we always call that the granddad of all the baseball gloves that came about afterwards. I mean, and you can see, as you said, throughout that that building and the tour, the evolution of the gloves, and then you got the big gold glove vault room in there.
Yeah.
We have all that stuff, and then there's lots of other displays we've kind of put around in there.
Yeah.
You know, with all the glove talk for all these last couple of years, Dave, I keep forgetting I have this, like, old 1950s-something catcher's glove. And it's just like a pad, but it's got a little dent in the middle.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah. It's a pillow. Case.
And it's from, I forget who it was, a buddy of mine sent it to me. I have the full gear, the chest protector, the mask, the glove, from a guy that used them in the major leagues back in the day. And I keep forgetting to bring the glove in, but it's such a, I put it on, I'm like, how does anybody use this thing?
Right.
How does anybody use this thing, let alone to stop a pitch from 60 feet away?
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, as we said before, when they first started the game, the catcher stood about 15 feet behind.
Stood.
to let it bounce because they couldn't catch it. And that also was another game change. He got even that pillow glove was the first. He stepped up closer to the plate, was down on the plate, you know, could catch those balls there in the ground, but also is easier to throw people out from stealing. So it became a very defensive game with the evolution of the glove.
Yeah. Kev, what do you think? I know I ask these things all the time, probably drives you crazy, but if you brought one of these guys we're talking about to the current game, once they got past all of the, you know, oh my God, what do you think they would think of the game? Would they recognize it as their game?
Oh, they would recognize certain elements of it, but they would be blown away by the technology, the way things are measured, the way things are broken down on a very micro scale as to what you're doing,
like,
and
you're
how you're doing
track
it. Right, right. Like, wait a minute, you're actually tracking the angle of the bat as it approaches the ball. Like, I think they'd be blown away by that mostly, because in the times we're talking about, depending on how far you go back. I mean, if you're going back to like Babe Ruth, I mean, they would be blown away by everything. First of all, they'd be blown away that they get to fly to games instead of taking the train. That everybody does everything for you, you know, the money that they're making, all of these things would be just such jarring. But just the baseball side, I think they would be blown away by the speed of the game, because, you know, duh, bigger, faster, stronger. Every athletic endeavor has gone that way for the last 100 years. And then I think the tech and the way we analyze every small detail.
Well, I think that is probably one of the biggest comments I hear. You go to the ball game. We were there the other night. I had the Lindsay and Larry Berra, Yogi's children in, and son and granddaughter. We were celebrating with the annual St. Louis Browns reunion luncheon. 42nd one. Can you believe that? They haven't played in 73 years, and we still have a near sellout at the MAC. But we were sitting at the ball game. The scoreboard, I mean, if you want to look, I mean, it's like,
you're right.
It's a vision test. I mean, you know, the focus on, they got all these different statistics, and you're like, what is this? Yep. And it's constantly, what's that mean? Or, you know.
Yeah, pitch speed, exit velocities.
People and angles, I mean, they're like, the old scoreboards were, you know, just 1-9 across the top and the zeros or whatever.
But batting average, homers, and RBIs.
Yeah.
And the only thing up there.
And it's, I think that is really an epitome of the game where people, you know, how I would ask, you know, I'm not saying I'm against it, but I mean, the people who are sitting there, really, what percentage of people really understand and know what's going on, from even just how it's changed? Because just a few years, they had some statistics. Now is just like solid, you know, and that's me. But one of the things that was interesting in the one chapter I put, where Brooks Robinson met Home Run Baker at an old timers game, and Home Run Baker, great third baseman with the Yankees and a couple other teams. Mm-hmm. He brought his original glove, and Brooks Robinson, let me see, how in the hell did you catch with this thing? So him and Brooks, because I got to know Brooks, and it was like this whole question of, what is this? This is your baseball glove, you know? They were so small, a lot of times they just fold them up, put them in their back pocket. I mean,
It's funny, the name, because Home Run Baker's one of the, you know, the old nicknames were great. When you were out, Dave, I did a game with Andrew and Rach where it was a list of all these old school baseball names, and they had to determine which ones I made up and were fake and which ones are real.
Yeah.
And the hidden trick was they were all real and they were all ridiculous.
That's great.
But like, you guess of Home Run Baker, the most home runs he ever hit in a year was, I think, 11 or 12.
Yeah. You know, we always play this game. If you brought Babe Ruth, we played it today. If you brought Babe Ruth to today, I think you could take Brooks Robinson just as he was, and he could play tonight.
Defense?
For the Cardinals.
100%.
Yes. Yes.
Hitting would not be good, but defense, he would be every bit of what he was.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, these guys, and you see that, and even kids, guys you play maybe in your senior leagues that have played all through, you have the reflexes, and they just immediately come back and things. And, you know, the game really hasn't changed for a Brooks Robinson. It's hit at you, you catch it.
It's probably hit a little harder on average, but, I mean, again, he was so good, I think.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and some people would say maybe it was even a little harder because they weren't throwing as fast. He would get around faster and hit at him at third base. You know, maybe he would learn more.
Yeah.
He in that game where he became known as the human vacuum cleaner, he made a couple of those World Series against the Reds, backhanded way back behind the bag and threw him across. You know, start using that AstroTurf.
Yeah.
Now these guys, they don't have that AstroTurf like Ozzy.
Yeah.
You know, extended his career and, you know, made great use of it that year he got hurt, of the AstroTurf and how pure you can get that. It's a...
I'll tell
the game changes.
I think they'd be shocked at how great the grass and dirt is.
Oh,
those guys would be blown away. Because in some cases, I wouldn't say as far as like an actual cow pasture, but they were like fields.
Yeah.
Like you would play like when you're in high school or grade school, as opposed to like it's a golf course. You're on a fairway when you're playing on that infield.
It is.
Well, I was sitting next to John Maupin yesterday at the game, and I was telling him that when you and I went out there and took ground balls at Bush, I was shocked at how quickly those balls get to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a pool table, man.
Yep.
It's even more impressive.
They are unique in that they're spongy the way it is, but yet the ball does, but it comes cleaner now. You talk about bumps here, there.
Yep.
We here in St. Louis had probably the worst field in the major leagues back when the Cardinals and Browns were sharing Sportsman's Park. Marty Marion, MVP of 1944, he called Mr. Shortstop. He used to complain it was like playing on a playground, asphalt, because they never just soaked it because it was either the Browns were playing that day or the Cardinals were playing that day. So there was never really major days
no
off.
Days for maintenance.
They could soak it, and it was as hard as could be with this summer heat we have here in St. Louis. But everybody complained about Sportsman's Park.
We're talking to Ed Wheatley. His book is The Finest in the Field, A History of Baseball through 50 Iconic Gloves. Great Father's Day gift for anyone, any dad out there. But I wanted to take a couple of minutes, Ed. I don't know that much about the Browns. Give us a little overview of the Browns and why people are so obsessed with that team.
Well, I'll give you the overview quick, and then I'll tell you the obsession is they weren't a part of the original class. National League is the start of the Major League in 1876, and this Cardinal team that we root for didn't come until 1892.
Right.
There was an 1876 Brown Sockings team in the National League. They got kicked out after 2 years, some gambling, game fixing. The Maroons came in the 1884. They didn't last financially. But the Cardinals that we root for, their roots in the National League is 1892. The Browns came in 1901 because St. Louis at that time was the fourth largest city in America, loving of baseball. It was the entertainment. You know, there wasn't TV, video games, anything. Baseball was such this thing that took the country. And so in 1901, when the American League was formed, there was a team in Milwaukee called the Brewers. And the Ban Johnson, the president of the American League, says, we're going to St. Louis and compete against the Cardinals. It's big enough that you can have two teams. And the Cardinals, once they got into the National League, they've been very good in the American Association, winning multiple American Association titles. But they came in, they were aging out, and they were just not very good, bottom sellers. Browns came in, moved from Milwaukee. They did really great, led by Branch Rickey, helped get them going very good. And then they had some forks in the road, and they – you know, Yogi said, you get a fork in the road, take it. The Browns always took the wrong road, and things happened. And they played here until 1953, played the Cardinals in the 1944 World Series, had some great men. 15 men are in the Hall of Fame from the Browns. George Sisser, one of the greatest men to ever play the game, 3-year average of over 400. You know, first MVP in baseball in 1922, Browns. We also had the first rookie of the year in American League in 1949 with Roy Sievers, a local St. Louis boy out of Beaumont High School. So they have a good history. But so do the New York Giants, the Brooklyn Dodgers, Philadelphia A's, and Boston Braves. But they don't have anything. And as you spoke, we had yesterday our 42nd annual reunion luncheon, filled the MAC ballroom. And we do that every year. And I think it's because St. Louis truly is the best baseball town in America. We have such intelligent fans. We have the winning ways of the Cardinals. You know, the Browns, you know, they had the one pennant. They played the Cardinals. But it's the energy and the knowledge and the love of the game here. And that love of the game was brought through to all the fans through, like, KMOX and the great – you know, when you go up to Cooperstown and you go into the broadcast wing, and how many of them sat in St. Louis? And then the sports writers. You go across the hall to the sports writers wing in the Hall of Fame, and we'll be up there. This book has been picked for a recognition, and I'll be up in Cooperstown on August 8th. And, you know, it's that, I think, in all the times I write, why? It's because the intelligent fan, the love of the game. It's been instilled father to son. You know, even in the Browns, they haven't played in 73 seasons. We're filling it up, but it's people. My grandfather, my father was such a Browns fan because there was this like kind of a white collar, blue collar type love of the city between the two teams, even though they played in the same stadium. It's just that remembering and creating new generations who want to learn about this team.
That's great. The book, again, is The Finest in the Field. Pick it up for Father's Day. Ed, don't go away. I'm going to have you sign mine. Good to see you, my friend.
All right.
Welcome back, DGS. Holly, can I go here, Rach?
I need you to do zero res for me at 28.
Okay. Just a short little segment because we spend a lot of time talking to Ed about the baseball book. Wheels, we have a new pitcher showing up.
Yeah, Max Rogic is coming up. So he used to be a starting pitcher for the Cardinals. He was in college. He was a closer and a starter. He did a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
He pitched at UCLA. This will be his first shot at the big leagues. He was a starter last year. Didn't go great. 5 ERA in the minor leagues. But he's been converted to the pen this year, and he's been awesome.
Good.
So low ERA, high strikeout rate, doesn't give up a lot of hits. So he's taking the spot that belonged to Chris Roycroft. And then if Fernandez gets healthy, I'm sure we'll see Fernandez back maybe in that spot. But you're going to get to see a new Cardinals member of the bullpen.
I like the aggression.
Yeah. Yeah,
I love it.
They've been faster on the draw this year than they were in the past. And I think some of it is they just have more guys ready to help out. Yeah.